لا الہ الا اللہ محمد الرسول اللہ.
So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam name was there already before that. That hadith in which it is mentioned that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala created my noor. خَلَقَ اللَّهُ نُورِ. Allah ta'ala created my noor. When? At a time when Hazrat Adam alayhi salatu wasalam wa Adam bayn al-ma'i wa al-teen. Hazrat Adam alayhi salatu wasalam was still between water and earth. That means how they knead the dough. So the earth, it is as if the Hazrat Adam alayhi salatu wasalam dough was being kneaded to make his body. So at that time already Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam noor was created. So what I am saying is that Rasulullah Paak, and whenever we say that at the age of 40 he got nubuwwat, then we should not misunderstand this. Many people say, well then it shows that you don't believe in Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam nubuwwat before that. So his nubuwwat was there, but the zuhur of that came at the age of 40. It's just like that child who has become a millionaire, as I gave that example the other day also in the majlis, that child was not even born. The child was still in the mother's stomach, and the doctor passed away in an accident. And his estate was 2 million plus. And this child, when it was born, was already not, in fact it wasn't even born at that time, the child was already a millionaire, but the arrival of that child did not take place in this world, so we couldn't give that estate to a child that's not yet born, hasn't come into this world. But in Allah Ta'ala's sight, in Allah Ta'ala's knowledge, it was already there that this child will then come into this world and will survive. Because if the child didn't survive, then there was no inheritance. Or if there was a miscarriage, there was no inheritance. So in Allah Ta'ala's knowledge, it was there that this child will survive. And because of that, this child will get inheritance. And the inheritance will be what the father has left behind. So that million plus, or whatever is his share, will come to him. So we will say that the child was a millionaire, but was not aware of it. In fact, after it came into this world also, after that son was born also, it would have taken many, many years. In fact, I don't think that son must be more than about 5 or 6 years of age now, the time that I was dealing with that estate. It must be about 5, 6 years. So that child must be about 5, 6 years of age now. Now at this age, does the child understand at the age of 4 or 5, what is 1 million, what is 2 million? It doesn't understand. But the fact is that in the bank account of the child is that amount that it received as inheritance, that he received as inheritance. So in the same way, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, before he even came into this world, he was a Nabi of Allah Ta'ala. In the eye of Allah, in the sight of Allah, and in the knowledge of Allah Ta'ala, he was a Nabi. He was already blessed with it. But he was only informed of it when he was 40 years of age. So this example is something that clears this whole issue of the nubuwwat of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam at the age of 40. That it was the zuhur of that, that now everybody came to know that he is a Nabi of Allah Ta'ala. Although there were many signs, just like this child. Now I don't know what the condition is, but the thing is that if the child is so rich from now, surely the child must be wearing good clothes, living in a good home, getting good food, plenty of toys, plenty of attention. So now when somebody looks at all those signs, then they will say, no, this child seems to be a rich child. So the child is of rich parents. Why? Because the signs are there, the outward signs are there. In the same way, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, all the outward signs were there that he was a Nabi of Allah Ta'ala. Even in that journey that he made with the merchandise of Hazrat Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, at that time too, there were so many places where these signs were becoming apparent that he is someone who is being protected by the angels of Allah Ta'ala. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, his nubuwat was, the zuhur of that was at the age of 40. What were we discussing? The lives, mashallah. So the lives of the people of the past. Now Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, Yes, what I was saying is that his life of tabligh, Hazrat Nuh alayhi salatu wasalam's life of tabligh itself was according to some 900 and according to some 950 years. Now if 950 years was his tabligh, the dawat that he gave, the invitation that he gave towards Islam, towards Allah, towards Akhirat, towards Jannat, Yaqeen in Jannat, Yaqeen in Jahannam, if that itself was 950 odd years, then we can imagine what his own age must be. So the people of the past, they used to live for a very, very long time. And the reason for that was that the earth had to be populated. Hazrat Adam alayhi salatu wasalam's time, Hazrat Hawa used to give birth to twins, one boy, one girl. Overnight they were grown up and they were adults. And then they married, it was the same, carried on like that. They kept giving birth to children, these people kept giving birth. There was no question of going through all the whole process of labor and confinement and all those kind of things. It was Allah Ta'ala's system. It was the early stage of man on this earth, and Allah Ta'ala wanted to cause the spread of man on earth. So his whole system was different. And we do not have to have doubt in all these type of things, especially nowadays with all the research that there is being done, and all the test tube babies and this kind of the experiments and whatever they are doing. So if Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala changed the system, he had a different system at that time and a different system now, then why do we doubt? And in fact, in front of us there are so many examples that when the elephant gives birth to a cub, now does that elephant go for confinement after it? Or that baby elephant or that cub now has to be educated over a long period of time how to walk. Does the elephant hold it and make it walk like how we make the baby walk? It takes a bit of time, after 1 year or 6 months or 8 months or whatever it is, you have to hold the hands and make the child walk and then make sure it doesn't fall. Nothing like that happens. It's just born and after a little while it just shakes itself and then it starts walking and follows the mother. The same you see with so many other creation of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. So Allah Ta'ala keeps those examples before us, so that if we've got any kind of worm in our head which is causing problems in our understanding, then it will be cleared out. That when there are so many examples before you, then why are you doubting? Those who have doubts about the Akhirat, that there will be a day of resurrection. So the biggest objection of the kuffar was that after we turn to dust, how can we come back to life? That was their biggest objection. So once you turn to dust, then nobody has afterwards from the dust got up again and spoken to us. They say once you turn to dust, you turn to dust, finish. That's the end of life. In Surah Qaf, that is what Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala discusses. قاف والقرآن المجيد بل عجبوا أن جاءهم منذر منهم فقال الكافرون هذا شيء عجيب أإذا متنا وكنا ترابا ذلك رجع بعيد. So that was their objection. أإذا كنا ترابا. Once we become away earth and sand, after that how are we going to come to life? How can we be resurrected? How can we be recreated? How can we get life again and then get intelligence and get body and get everything else? So Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala gives different examples. But for the ordinary man who doesn't have very much intelligence, who doesn't have very much scientific knowledge, and who is not very sophisticated in his understanding, then Allah Ta'ala causes every year in front of the eyes of ordinary simple people the trees to dry up. That the tree which was green, full of green leaves, suddenly after that when winter comes, then the leaves begin to drop. In autumn it begins to go. So the leaves started dropping. As soon as autumn came, you find slowly, slowly it's going. Until when winter comes, you drive up the north and see in passing Moy River and Escort and other places on the en route, that most of those trees completely barren, finish. All the leaves are gone. It is as if the trees have become naked and dead, completely dead. No life is left in those trees. Then again Allah Ta'ala sends the rain. The rain comes, and in spring again you find everything is blooming and the leaves are green. So all the leaves were dead, everything was gone, there was no life left. Then how it came again? So these are the simple examples that Allah Ta'ala keeps before our eyes. For those who don't have a very intelligent mind, they too can see these signs of Allah Ta'ala, that if these things can die and come to life again. Or take the egg every day before our eyes. Everybody is having eggs for breakfast. So at that time you must ponder and think that from the dead egg, Allah Ta'ala took out the live chick. And from the life chick, Allah Ta'ala takes out a dead egg. So these are examples before man, that just as these things are happening in this life, there will be resurrection also. That if you turn to dust, who was it that first brought you into existence? We came into existence how? When the mother and father met, then at that time Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala made the mother conceive. But if you have to go into the details of all that, then the mother must have eaten some fruits, the father must have eaten some vegetable, must have eaten some meat, must have eaten some fish, he must have eaten some nuts, he must have eaten some biscuits and chocolates. Now all those things that he ate, now what is the origin of all that? Earth. The origin of all that is earth. Where did it come from? The biscuits which are made of flour. And where does flour come from? Did they produce it in the factory? Did they have some kind of mantra or some kind of jadu that they just blow on the machines and flour gets produced? They had to bring the wheat from somewhere. They had to bring the grains from somewhere. And where did those grains all come from? The earth. If you take the milk of the cow, they drank the milk. So now where did the milk come from? Came from the cow. And how did it come into the cow? Came from the grass that it ate. And where did the grass come from? Came again from the earth. Take everything and you'll come back to origin earth. So that earth, from sources of all these things which they have eaten, then it changed to blood and changed to sperm, and after that all the details that go with it. So that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala who caused this child to come into this world for the first time, now what is it difficult for him to bring him back to life for the second time? So these are examples that Allah Ta'ala keeps before us so that we do not forget that he is all-powerful creator. And we do not become confused in this age of science, that there is no need to believe in the existence of God and Allah, because we can now sit in our laboratories and we can give life. That giving of life is a sign of Qiyamah. It's going to come to that. When Dajjal will come, this is all the elementary stages, the beginning stages. It is all moving in that same direction what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said. We do not understand it now, or they couldn't understand it in the past, but now it becomes easy to understand. Now it becomes easy for us to understand that what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam had mentioned, how true it was. So this giving of life, it is now becoming what they say they're going to be creating life, or with all this cloning and everything that's taking place. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam foretold about Dajjal, that when he's going to come, then besides the other incidents that have been mentioned, one is that this person will be told to believe in him as Allah. And he says that I give life and death and I do this and that and all, you must believe in me as Allah. So the person who will be a mu'min, a true mu'min, he will refuse to believe in him. I'm just giving you the gist of that. He'll refuse to believe in him. So Dajjal will order that he must be sliced into two.
It must be sliced into two, like how the magicians do. So that's what he's going to do. He's going to perform magical tricks, basically. Allah Ta'ala will give him that qudrat. Allah Ta'ala will give him that qudrat, and it will mislead a lot of people. So then he will walk between him and then say, right now, come back to life. So this person will come back to life. When he'll come back to life, he said, don't you believe in me as Allah now? So he will say, now I firmly believe that you are the Dajjal, regarding whom my Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam foretold. Because he will recognize on his forehead this kaf, ara, and kufr will be written on his forehead. So he will recognize him by that this is the Dajjal. So that is what is going to happen. In the future it is going to happen. So all these scientific experiments that they are doing, it is heralding towards that. So Allah Ta'ala, who could have created man for the first time, what is it difficult for him to bring him back to life? Nothing difficult. In fact, if we look at our own bodies, now these fingernails, why did they grow here at the end of? From where did the nails grow? And if a person really wants to recognize Allah Ta'ala, then if he just looks into any part of his body, he can recognize Allah Ta'ala. The thumbprint is a very common one which I always give. Millions and billions of people, no two persons with the same thumb impression and print. But even if you have to just look at the fingernails, why didn't the nails cover the whole body? I mean, which mother programmed it? Like they said, it's a computer age. Everything is done by programming. So it's okay, in computer age you program that you want a certain thing to come up here or come up there in the factories by programming in the computer, so many things happen. Now which mother could have programmed in the stomach that the fingernails must only grow at the tip of the fingers? Did any mother up till now make a mistake in the programming and the fingernails or the nails grew over the eyes? Imagine if they made mistakes in the programming. In fact, it is Allah Ta'ala's fazal that he didn't leave the programming to the mothers, that you must do the programming of the child. Because if they did the programming, we do not know how many mistakes we would have had by now. People would have been born with parts of the body all mixed up. Why, they say, mother made mistake in the programming. Isn't it? So this is Allah Ta'ala's fazal, so that he caused the fingernails to grow at the end of the fingers. So that Allah can cause that after the flesh, at the end of it, then hard nails. So can't Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala create again? So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, he looked at the ages of the people of the past. And when he looked at the ages of the people of the past, then he felt a bit disappointed that his ummah, they will not have such a long lifespan. He said, the average age of my ummah is going to be between 60 and 70. That's the average. Although many, many people in these days don't even see 6, where they're going to see 60? So many little children are going with bomb blasts. Thousands of them are gone. They don't even see 6 years of age. So when the ummah's age span is going to be very limited, so how will they be then able to achieve what those people in the past achieved? That is the issue. And how will they be able to achieve that? It is not possible for them. Even if they have to make ibadah day and night, even if they have to spend 24 hours of the day, then too they will not be able to exceed, they will not be able to even level with those of the past. Now that was his concern. So he says, when he was pondering over the lives of the earlier people, he was saddened. If his ummah had wished to compete with the people before them in the doing of righteous deeds, then because of their shorter lives, it would be impossible for them to either emulate or surpass them. And to compensate for this difference in the lifespan, Allah Ta'ala gave this ummah the night of Qadr. This means that if any fortunate person in the ummah spends during his lifetime 10 such nights in the worship of his Allah, he would have gained the reward for ibadah of 830 years and even more. Now that was what was worrying Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, and it was saddening him that the other ummahs had such long lifespan, so Allah Ta'ala gave Laylatul Qadr. So if the person has to spend 10 such nights, then according to the Quranic verse, Laylatul Qadr khayrum min al-fisha. So that person is getting 830 years of ibadat sawab. Whereas the Quranic verse does not say that it is equivalent to 1,000 months. The Quranic verse does not say Laylatul Qadr is equivalent to 1,000 months. It says khayrum min al-fisha, better than 1,000 months. Now that better than, in the eye of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, what is the limit? Only Allah Ta'ala knows. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, for the sake of the ummah, he was all the time concerned. His love for the ummah was such that he wanted to see them excel. He wanted to see them ahead of everyone. He wanted to see them beat every other ummah in the accumulation of good and righteous deeds. As I mentioned earlier, that his concern was not that the ummah must be better than everybody else in the accumulation of gold and silver and oil wells. At present, the whole competition that is in the ummah is on worldly and material things. So Sharia doesn't stop us from competing. The mizaj and the jazbah of competition is a natural instinct in man. Allah Ta'ala, He creates this type of instincts, and then He gives us an outlet where can we vent our instincts, where can we find a way out for it. For example, the instinct of carnal passions, so Allah Ta'ala again made nikah an institution, that by means of that, in a jais and a halal way, the person gives his emotions or his passions a way. In the same way here, this jazba and this instinct which Allah Ta'ala has created of competition in man to make progress. Now if he had suppressed it, that no, you must not make any progress, you must not compete with anybody in anything, then we would have said that our emotions are being stifled, our desires are being stifled. We can't seem to compete, we do not know what to do, because everybody else is competing, they are chasing after each other, they are racing, and they are trying to beat each other. So now here, what do we do? As Muslims, as believers, now we don't have anything to do because we are not allowed to compete. So here from these hadiths we learn that competition is a natural thing. A person would like to beat the other. So if you like to beat the other, then beat them in the doing of good deeds. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam wanted long life for his ummah so that they beat the other ummahs in the doing of good deeds. That was the purpose. Now as far as the doing of good deeds is concerned, it's an ocean, it's so vast an area where you can compete. You can compete in namaz. One person is making 5 times namaz, now you make with that you make ishraq. Now somebody is making 5 times namaz and ishraq, then you make with that chasht. The person is making ishraq and chasht, you can compete and make ishraq, chasht and awwabin. The person is making ishraq, chasht and awwabin, you make tahajjud namaz with that. Or you make other nafil namazes. So there is an unlimited area. Then again, if it comes to just the namaz, even if that person started competing, and as many nafil namaz you started making, the same amount of nafil namazes he started making, then there's another category in which you can compete, and that is the category of ikhlas in that ibadat, ikhlas in that namaz, ikhlas in that zikr, ikhlas in that tashahud, ikhlas in that dua-e qunut, or ikhlas in that qiraat of that salat. Now there again, that area is such that nobody really knows how high the person can climb. Because one person is making namaz, he is making ishraq, awwabin, chasht and tahajjud. But he is making it just like a fulfillment of some timetable. That is ishraq times, I must make ishraq. His awwabin time, I must make awwabin. And the other person has got khushu and khuzu in his salat. Now there you can go deeper and deeper, you can go higher and higher. There's no limit to it. Because Allah Ta'ala's ma'rifat, as much as you will have, as much as it will increase, that is how higher you will go. So there's unlimited competition in there. What's off? It's not going through there. So what must we do? Ask Musa, you should know. So the competition there, just want to tell them we don't know what's wrong with it. So the competition there is unlimited. We do not know how high the person can go. That is what we mean by in the ma'rifat of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, somebody can be soaring in the skies at 30,000 feet above sea level, somebody at 40, somebody at 80, 90, and then space is unlimited. You can carry on until you reach the arsh of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. So competition is something that is natural. Everybody wants to compete. In generosity, a person can have competition. Allah Ta'ala also wants us to compete. وَسَارِعُوا إِلَىٰ مَغْفِرَةٍ مِّن رَبِّكُمْ وَجَنَّةٍ عَرْضُهَا السَّمَاوَاتُ وَالْأَرْضُ وَعِدَّتْ لِلْمُتَّقِينَ. So Allah Ta'ala also wants us to compete. But that competition, وَفِي ذَلِكَ فَلْيَتَنَافَسِ الْمُتَنَافِسُونَ. So this competition must be in good deeds, in righteous deeds. Now one person is giving 10 rands charity. From his 100 rand that he saves after purchasing all his necessities of life, then he saves 10 rand, or he gives away 10 rand at charity. The other person who saves 100 rand, he gives away 20 rand. And somebody who gives away 50 rand, and somebody gives away the whole 100 rand. So like that, there again this competition. You can compete in zikr. In zikr also one person can be reading 1,000 times Subhanallah, you can read 2,000 times. Of course it is not right that a person should just go blindly into this type of competition. You must take advice from the mashayikh or whoever the person is bared to. It must be controlled, it must be disciplined. Because some people went into excess and after that they went off their heads. They got dehydrated. Then they blame Shariat and Deen for that. Allah Ta'ala didn't make all that farz that you do so much that you get sick. So there must be a limit to everything, there must be control. But I am just giving you by way of example that in these type of things, in good deeds, there is competition that you can have. So all our competition today is not in good deeds. In fact, even when it comes to good deeds, our competition is not because it is a good deed, but we want to show that I am also someone, that I also can do so much. If one person is giving so much, then I want to show that I can also give more than that. If the niyat is I want to give so that people may see and give more than that, then it is permissible. But here if the niyat is so that I may be called a very generous and a charitable person, so the person is giving plentiful, is beating everybody else, but in the end of the day he got nothing, no sawab, because there's no ikhlas. So our competition is not in good deeds, our competition is just for name, fame and things like that. But if a person is really, he's got ikhlas, then there's a whole world out there where he can compete instead of just competing in increasing wealth and fortune. But if the person is even competing in increasing his wealth and fortune with the niyat that the more Allah Ta'ala gives to me, the more I will give in charities, the more poor and needy I can take care of, the more masjids and madrasas I can assist, the more widows and orphans can be helped, the more I can give towards good causes. Now if he has that kind of niyat, then even his increasing or his effort to increase his earnings will be rewarding. the bottom line is that the competition must be for the pleasure of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala in the accumulation of good deeds. Now all that becomes good deeds. So how simple and easy Islam is. It doesn't stifle our natural instincts. All it does is regulates it. If we only understand that it doesn't stifle our natural instincts, it just regulates it. Anger is a natural thing, it comes. If somebody makes you angry and you don't get angry, then the person is not a human being. So anger is something that is natural. In fact, if the person is made to get angry and doesn't get angry, then say he's a donkey. Imam Shafi'i Rahmatullah Alayhi says a mule. That's something that should make him angry and he's not getting angry. But if after that somebody says, make me maaf, and the person doesn't forgive, then he's a shaitan. So anger is natural. But then, what Sharia does is it regulates the thing. And it teaches us tolerance. It says that you must exercise tolerance. If the person is making you angry, so now you don't behave in the same manner. The anger will come, but the anger is a sifat of the heart. That means the anger will be in the heart. Outside, whatever happens after anger, it is the product of that which came into the heart. It's the eggs which the hen laid. That is what you see outside. But in reality, that anger came in the heart. Now if the person is not giving vent, he is controlling his anger for the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala, and he is exercising tolerance. So now that same thing became a great ibadat, and that anger now became his means of connection with Allah Ta'ala. But of course, why did Allah Ta'ala then keep that instinct of anger? Because if you don't have anger, you can't make jihad. The real place to show that anger is against the nafs and against the enemies of Islam when they are waging jihad against the believers. Now at that time you have no anger. You say, yeah, no problem. They can keep bombing us, they can keep destroying our land, they can destroy our property, they can take away our wealth, they can bombard our children. Why must we get angry? Nothing. You mustn't get angry. Or when there is a confrontation, then there is no anger. The person doesn't have that anger, how is he going to make jihad? So that anger must be controlled, it must be disciplined, the person, it must be regulated, it must be in accordance with the Quran and Sunnah. So the instinct of anger is not bad, it is just where you use that anger. So like that here also, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, he didn't stifle, the Shariat of Deen didn't stifle our instinct of competition. What it did, it is regulated it, that where you should compete and where you should not compete. How simple and easy. How practical Islam is. Because by the way, all this got nothing to do with the topic, but it just came to mind that I always give that example that people say in business, how can you run big industries and how can you run big companies today? Because you have to borrow money to buy the machinery that you require. And everywhere you go, they say, well, you're going to charge you interest. You have to pay installments. So you say that there is no problem at all. Islam has got a solution for that. It's simple. It's practical. So the person has got only, he hasn't got money, and he's badly in need of a small truck or a van or something. And all the garages that he go to, they say, well, HP, so much, interest, so much, that, so much. So now what is the way out? The way out is to tell that garage owner or that vehicle owner that I can pay you over 24 months or I can pay you over 36 months in equal installments. So what will this truck cost me? Work it out and tell me that if I have to pay you in equal installments over 36 months, what will be the total cost of this truck or this van? Now the person for his company, he hasn't got money, person, nobody is giving him interest-free loan. So now that's all he has to ask that owner, that what will it cost me? So now that person will do his calculations and say, HP charges, interest charges, finance charges, whatever charges he can call it, that's his business. Now he will work out and he will tell you that this vehicle is going to cost you 200,000 ren. Something that would have cost you 120 or 30, but because you are taking it over 36 months, so he did all his calculations and he says it's going to cost you 200,000 ren and payable over 36 months in equal installments. Now the buyer has to only make one simple statement that I am closing the deal, or I am purchasing the vehicle, or I am doing the deal with you for 200,000 payable over 36 months. You draw up the documents and I will sign. Now whether he calls it interest, he calls it finance charge, he calls it whatever charge he likes. As far as you are concerned, you purchased it for 200,000 payable over 36 months. So calling interest, if it is profit and you call it interest, it doesn't make it interest. If somebody is really and truly earning a profit and he writes down interest, so it doesn't make it interest. And if he's earning interest and he calls it profit, so it will not become profit, it will be interest. Just the word will not change anything. There are many people, for tax reasons, they borrow money from themselves and they pay interest to themselves. In books, that is what they do, that they borrow money too from themselves and they pay interest to themselves. So now that doesn't change the rule. It doesn't mean that he's really paying interest. Does anybody pay interest to himself? So how simple and easy it is. It's practical. It's just that we have to have the knowledge. We have to go to those who know about Deen and Sharia and tell them that this is my problem. How do I come out of it? Now some stupid will say, what difference does it make? If that man went there and took it on HP and interest charges and finance charges and all that, and he didn't really find out what will be the end result, and he took the vehicle, so he will still pay 200,000. And in this case too, he's paying 200,000. Now just by going about it this way, what difference did it make? The difference that it made is that this is pleasing to Allah Ta'ala. It will bring barakat, it will be halal, it will be jaiz. And the other one is going to be haram, so it's going to be displeasing to Allah Ta'ala, and it will not only take away the barakat, but finally the person could even lose everything else. He'll go deeper and deeper into problems because of interest. So it is simple and easy. It is practical. Islam is not difficult. Deen is practical. Allah Ta'ala made deen for human beings, not for animals, not for elephants, not for the creatures. Deen is for human beings. And human beings have got life, they've got intelligence, they've got body, they've got children, they've got families, they've got everything. It's a paragon of Allah Ta'ala's creation. So therefore Allah Ta'ala made every law such that it can be practiced at all times. Allah Ta'ala was not there only for the time of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and after that finish. Allah Ta'ala is there till the day of Qiyamah. I mean, the deen of Islam is there till the day of Qiyamah. And people will come and they will be living in different countries, different climates, different places. So they will require the knowledge of deen and Sharia, or they too have to be able to live. So if they have these type of problems, then there will be a solution in Sharia for them. And this is the solution. But if a person is not concerned about what is halal, what is haram, is not concerned about deen and Sharia and Quran and Sunnah, then of course we got no argument with such people. Then they will do what they wish to do. But those people who are really concerned, they want to do it the halal way, but they feel that they are stifled, they cannot move, they cannot progress. So if they really find out, there are many ways which are halal, which are practical, which are easy and simple. Simple solution and 100% halal. And it is not a question of just playing around or fooling around or trying to play monkey tricks, as people do sometimes with zakat funds, that they know one masla, that if before the end of the year you give the money away to somebody, all the money you give it away to somebody, then there's no zakat. That's the masla. That a person had 10,000 rands, but before one day before the expiry of the 1 year, he gives the 10,000 away to somebody as a gift. So now if he gives it away as a gift, then finish, there's no zakat. Because he gave it away, he doesn't own now anything. So now if this is the masla, now one day before the end of the year, he gives it to his wife as a gift. He says, there's 10,000, I'm giving it to you as a gift. And then one year, one day before her 1 year expires, she takes it and gives it to him as a gift. So like that, all lifelong, they're not going to pay any zakat. She will give him the gift, he gives her the gift. Now you think this is the correct understanding of that masla? The masla in its space is correct. If you have to ask any mufti, he will say the masla is correct. That if one day before expiry, if somebody gave it away as a gift, then there's no zakat. So the masla is correct, but we must not become like the Bani Israel. They were told not to catch fish on Saturday, so Friday night they put their nets and they put all kinds of things to catch the fish. And Allah Ta'ala is to send fish to in plentiful on Saturdays. So late night or early morning they put it there, now all the fish comes inside the net, then on Sunday they pull it out. And they say, but we didn't catch fish on Saturday. So Allah Ta'ala also changed them to monkeys. Allah Ta'ala changed them to monkeys and pigs. Why? Because they were playing monkey tricks. So there are many maslas which are in their place correct, but the wrong usage of that masla should not be our way. Now here it is not a wrong usage, it is a correct usage. That there is a masla, that in this way if you buy it and you sell and all that, it becomes 100% halal. So this is not something that you are doing to deceive or anything like that. It's a straightforward, practical solution to the problem. So we were discussing Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam looking at the lifespans of the ummah of the past, and it was saddening him that our ummah or his ummah will not be able to exceed the other ummahs in good deeds. So Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala blessed him and his ummah with this Laylatul Qadr. Therefore Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said that no other ummah in the past was given this ni'mat of Laylatul Qadr. It was only blessed, he only blessed my ummah with it. As I started off with the explanation that Allah Ta'ala made the whole earth a masjid for the ummah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, meaning that wherever they are, if the time of namaz arrives, then they can make namaz on the ground which is clean and park, irrespective of where they may be. Now that is a speciality. In the same way, this is a speciality. So should we not then, as the ummatis of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, show some kind of a concern, and some kind of an interest and an urge to find Laylatul Qadr? He was so concerned that we should not be deprived. But what is the condition of the ummah at large? We're not talking about the few that sit down for i'tikaf or that make some effort in their homes. But we're talking about the ummah at large, that it is of no concern at all. One night in the year, some 27th night or 29th night or some night, make ibadah the whole night and finish. After that, the whole Ramadan, there is no real effort. So whatever days are gone, but what is left now, still we should not lose hope in Allah Ta'ala. We should apply ourselves and we should make the maximum effort to get the closeness of Allah and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, forgiveness of our sins, and make a lot of dua for the ummah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam also. Allahumma inni as'aluka min khayri ma sa'alaka minhu nabiyyuka Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, wa a'udhu bika min sharri ma sta'aza minhu nabiyyuka Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, wa anta al-musta'an wa alayka al-balagh, wa la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah.